For many years, one of the brightest and most astute bylines in the city of Chicago was appeared in the Reader and then later in the Sun-Times. And then Don McLeese left Chicago in a kind of circuitous kind of route to Austin, Texas, where he also wrote, then to Iowa, where he teached and taught and maybe still teaches. He's coming back to Chicago and will be here Wednesday night at the Hideout, where I'll be Tuesday night. This is crazy. Don, I was always, as you know, a great admirer of yours. And this book, his third, but vastly different from the previous two, this is titled Slippery Steps, Rolling and Tumbling Towards Sobriety. I was chilled and charmed and riveted by this book. So congratulations on that, because that's, I guess, why you write a book. Yes, Don?
Well, thank you so much, Rick. And it's great talking to you after
you
all
too.
This time.
You too.
And I never really left Chicago. You know, I mean, I still keep circling back. I'm there.
Well, you've got that amazing friend John Sauce here and Lloyd Sachs, and
I do have friends and family, and yeah, I feel better connected to Chicago and to Austin, for that matter, than I do to Iowa. But that's, you know, and I've been here 20 years.
Iowa's vastly different than both places. The book begins. Yeah. I'm going to read just a couple sentences here. The book begins in an utterly chilling fashion. This is Don McLeese writing. I wasn't exactly sure who I was, where I was, or why. I had no idea how long I'd been there. It was very dark out, and it was still pouring, but it was 10 at night. Was it 10 at night or 4 in the morning? There was lightning, and there was thunder. It was a hot August night in West Des Moines. I was lying on the grass, immobile, and soaked. No one in their right mind, Don McLeese, could not continue reading that book to find out why you wound up there. And that story is remarkable. This must have been, though, old friend, a difficult book to write.
It was a difficult book to write, but it was a really helpful book to write. And in some ways, you know, just cleansing, redemptive, whatever. I wrote it kind of for myself, you know, more than anybody.
Sure.
I had to write it not thinking about marketing or publishing or who was going to read it or what they were going to think. I wanted to make sense of myself to myself. And despite that foreboding intro, you should let people know that it does have a happy end.
Yes, it's, well, you're on the phone with me. How much happier going to get?
But
you write also, you write later on in the book, you write, I didn't write this because I thought a book about me would have any intrinsic and value. And if I had, I could have made that part way more interesting. Rock stars, journalism, gossip, whatever. My purpose all along was to write about how sobriety can change your life, or at least has changed mine. In that fashion, I don't want to make too much of this, Don, but I think in that fashion, this is an unbelievably powerful, instructive book. Do you, would you say, yes, Rick, of course you're right, or no?
Well, I always say that, Rick, whatever you say. Yes, Rick, of course you're right. But yeah, in this case, I mean, I want to make it plain that I'm not preaching to anybody.
It's not a preachy book. You're right.
Pretty much all of my friends, my social circle, these are all people who drink. These are not people who have the problems with drinking that I had. I could have ultimately continued to drink and probably thought that my life was, you know, okay. I was doing okay.
You were high functioning. You had fallen into a routine. I'm not trying to show you that I really read the book, but you write here again. My routine at the Sun-Times required plenty of self-medicating, or so I thought, as I turned to coffee, beer, and margaritas, and marijuana to manage my increasingly compartmentalized life. My old Reader routine of morning running and writing no longer applied, for now I was writing reviews on an evening deadline, seeing a concert that I'd have to leave by 10:30 in order to drive to the newsroom to file before 11:30. I was not a person who felt all that coherent, let alone creative, after dinner, but I had to become one in order to do the job that now defined me. Man, you and I are of the same era in newspaper, and man, that is so true of me at a time, and you, and a lot of people we knew. You could, you could pull it off, couldn't you?
Well, I learned to pull it off. It didn't come naturally. I was more of a night person then, but I've always been more of a creative writer and a cogent writer in the morning.
Yeah.
And having to be at my best at, you know, 11:30 deadline, you know, and you know what that, pulse racing thing is like, and, you know, and how you can't, you know, you just keep plowing through. And then when you're done, it's, you know, it's not the adulation you get as a musician, but it's like having that peak adrenaline high at the time when everybody else is asleep. And you got to come down from that. And most people can just come down from it naturally, or they stay up for a while or whatever. I needed to force myself to come down for that because I was still a person who woke up really early in the morning to write.
Me too. That's exactly.
So I had to change everything, you know, in order to make that work.
One of the things that there are a lot of revelations in here. I mean, I know that Lloyd Sachs is a wonderful guy and John Soss is a wonderful guy. That didn't come as any surprise to me. But your time in Austin, when you were kind of lured away from the Sun Times to go to Austin, that was really, really revelatory for me about. My beat was the city's nightlife, the music clubs in particular, where there would always be friendly faces and free-flowing alcohol. That was not only seductive, but it was dangerous, too, Don McLeese, yes?
Yes, and it was very different than Chicago, because when I was in Chicago, I mean, there was plenty of liquor flowing freely in Chicago, but when I was on the rock beat, I was pretty much always the oldest person at the show. I mean, there were people who, you know, it was me and maybe the radio guys working the show and whoever was covering it, you know, from the competition. But otherwise, these, you know, people, by the time they get into their 30s or 40s or whatever, back then, they didn't continue to go to club shows as much.
Yeah.
But not to concerts. In Austin, music is the lifeblood of the city. So if you're part of that music scene, you know, I mean, it's like one big community and you become enmeshed in that community pretty quick. I should also say that Austin is a great place to get sober, although I did not get sober there. But it was the first time I met people who I really felt connected with and developed lifelong friendships with people who did not drink. And I never asked them what horrific thing had happened to make them no longer drink, but they didn't drink, I did, and everything was fine.
Yeah, same here. I'm talking to Don McLeese about his, what I think is a remarkable book, Slippery Steps, Rolling and Tumbling Toward Sobriety, that's just published, and Don will be at The Hideout on Wednesday night. Just go to hideoutchicago.com and you get all the information you need. We take a little commercial break and come back and talk a little bit more about, well, I don't want to talk too much about your mother and father. The stuff about your mother and father is really not disturbing, but it's moving to me because I had some of those same travails. And, you know, we will not talk about your first wife leaving, but I do want to talk about your wife, Maria. With that, there's a great, I'm going to read the part where you first set eyes on her, and I think it's charming. So you people, stay tuned. I have always admired Don McLeese's writing and his critical eye, even though I did like Sticks and he did not like Sticks. His book is fabulously insightful about life in general. It's called Slippery Steps, Rolling and Tumbling Toward Sobriety. There is a charming section where he talks about first seeing his very loyal, and I don't want to call her long-suffering because I think the suffering may be over. There have been roughly two halves of my life, Don writes, before and after, and the turning point is when I looked across Park West from the stairs above the main floor and saw a young woman with long, dark hair and a white frilly blouse, and I said to myself, and then maybe even to Lloyd Sachs, another of our mutual friends, you know, if I had a girlfriend like that, I think I could be really happy. Her name was Maria, and you have been really happy with her, with some very, 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 I won't get into many of them, but some rough, one particularly rough time that I won't mention, but you had two lovely daughters. You go to Cubs games still. how'd the family react to this book? I mean, you write very honestly and very emotionally, I think, about what your family, how your family observed you and what your family may have thought of you and how they reacted to your drinking when you drank.
You know, there's been mixed feelings.
Yeah, I bet.
Maria was never a huge fan of me doing this book, and some of the things that I felt, you know, I had to be really open about in this book to tell the story I wanted to tell. You know, I had to kind of pretend that this book wasn't going to be read. You know, and still, you know, most books, most people do not read most books.
True. I
had to do this as kind of a soul cleansing experience, and I had to set it up in such a way that, you know, that we faced some really uncomfortable times, which we did together. I think Maria's the hero of this book.
Absolutely. No question.
Yeah.
And that shines through, not on every page, but on page after page after page. And you can be, yeah, she's really something. I didn't know her well. I think I met her once or twice, and certainly thought.
Well, I think you and I were out drinking before I started dating her.
That's probably true.
Yeah. I think you were there at the beginning.
And half the people I know can say that about me. Rick, well, I thought before.
And you forgot most of them. You know, that was long ago.
That's true. And it wasn't the drinking that made me forget. It was just the passage, the passage of time, Don. The passage of time.
Old age. I'm older than you, Rick. It gets tough, you know. Maria had issues. There are members of my family.
Sure.
You know, they remember things differently than I do. I wish, you know, they would write their own books. You know, it's not. I've drawn from my life. When I was in Austin, I wrote a column that was kind of all over the map, and I drew from my life, sometimes from them. It isn't the first time that I've used personal experience in my writing. It's probably the deepest.
Oh, no question.
That I've gone into it, and any of our personal experience involves other people as well.
Good point.
And you know what you were bringing up with family before. I think a part of what this book is about is how much things have changed. I mean, because.
From the viewpoint, our parents, the whole
everybody drank.
Sure,
everybody smoked cigarettes. People
smoked
cigarettes on airplanes. You know, there were no interstates. You know, I mean, it was like covered wagons or whatever. You know, trying to explain this to people. So the whole idea that my dad might have had a drinking problem, which I don't know that he did. He handled it pretty well, but he drank. You know,
only beer though. Only beer.
Every night. Only beer, and it was common wisdom at that time that if you couldn't really have a drinking problem, you certainly weren't an alcoholic if you stuck to beer.
Well, you might drink
a lot of beer.
The way you write it in here, you write, at the time, alcoholics were comic figures in public culture, slurring and stumbling, and my dad was no comic figure, no Dean Martin or Foster Brooks. Man, that is a name I haven't thought of in a long time. I can see why, Don. I can see you really have your heart in this book, and I don't mean it to sound like this is a wonderful, you know, if you're having drinking problems, pick up Don McLeese's latest, Slippery Steps. I think it could be for someone incredibly instructive. The honesty you bring to it is very pointed, and it's palpable honesty, Don, and I think that is a real credit to you and could be a credit. It's also, you know, to my mind, it's a pretty rollicking read, man. It does end. It is. It has a happy ending. There's some crummy moments in there, but it has the fact that it has a happy ending is fantastic. I'm going to write about it, too. Because that's what I still do. Don, I'm going to try to get up there and see you because I know John Soss will be there, and Lloyd's, you've made Lloyd Sachs justifiably famous with your take on Lloyd. I'm hoping Lloyd will have a TV show after people read what you think of Lloyd. But Don, you are one of the people I greatly, greatly admire for a long time, and And I'm just saying congratulations on this book. It could not have been easy, and you pulled it off.
Well, thank you so much. And if I can say one thing, I mean, congratulations on your Lifetime Achievement Award. But well, if you can win a Lifetime Achievement Award and still have to go on the radio.
Yeah, I should kill myself. You know, yeah, my life, I should drink.
Tell them that I said you could take the next week off. You
know? Or commit suicide. It's one of two things. Don, I hope I get to see you this week, pal. And it's
I hope so, too.
It's an amazing book. An amazing,
thank you so
amazing
much.
Book. Thank you. Safe travels. Bye.